Okay, so the next talk will be on influenza. And you have heard about one emerging infection, and there are others, of course. There are quite a few virus emerging infections. And if you just look at this list, then you see that eventually all of these emerging infections are coming from an animal reservoir, so they are zoonoses. And there are two types of these zoonoses. All of them, of course, are coming from animal reservoirs, so these are animal viruses and they circulate between animals. And then the first type of the zoonoses are infections which are occasionally transmitted from this animal reservoir to man, but they are no longer transmitted from man to man, so this is in a way it's a dead end road. And Marburg virus, of course, is a prototype of this kind of zoonosis. And then we have a second type of zoonosis, and these viruses also come from the animal reservoir, and then they are transmitted to men, and they adapt to men. So in contrast to these viruses, which essentially stay an animal virus, these viruses are converted into a human virus. And from a biological point of view, and also, of course, from a public health point of view, these are the more interesting ones. And one of these infections is influenza, and another one is HIV, which we'll hear about in the next talk. Now, influenza was discovered in 1931 by Richard Chope in pigs. Then a couple of years later, these three British gentlemen discovered influenza viruses in men. And in 1955, Werner Schaefer in Germany recognized that foul plague virus, which was already discovered around the turn of the last century by Centani, that foul plague virus was an avian influenza virus. So the discovery of influenza virus outlines already that this is a zoonosis. This is influenza virus, and these are viruses which have an RNA genome, a segmented RNA genome, and the virus particles have an envelope, a lipid-containing envelope, and there are two major surface glycoproteins, the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase. And the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase are the major antigens, so the immune response, the cellular and the humoral immune response, is primarily directed against the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase. And these surface glycoproteins, they are highly variable. And so they come with 16 different hemagglutinin subtypes and 9 different neuraminidase subtypes, and in different combinations. And all of these viruses come from this natural reservoir, which are water birds or shore birds. And again, this is the reservoir, and then occasionally these viruses are transmitted to other to mammals, to horses or to pigs or to other birds, and occasionally also to men. So on very rare occasions after the transmission to another species, these viruses adapt to the new species. And if this occurs in men, then we have a pandemic. Now, the different viruses come with very different pathogenetic flavors. Of course, human influenza viruses mainly cause a respiratory disease. Most of the avian influenza viruses do not cause disease or very mild disease, but some of them cause a systemic disease, which is called foul plague. Now to come back to these pandemics, of course, as you all know, I mean, there was the most devastating pandemic was in 1918, and this was caused by an H1N1 virus, and this lasted until 1957, and then it was followed by an H2N2 virus, which lasted until 1968, and then this was replaced by an H3N2 virus. So the numbering of the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase, of course, indicates that there are new hemagglutinins and neuraminidases in these viruses. And then in 77, there was again an H1N1 virus, which was related to this one. And then we had occasional outbreaks or transmissions, I should say, of H5 and 2 avian influenza viruses to humans, which occurred during that period, and I will come back to this in a moment. And then in 2009, we had a new H1N1 virus, which I will come back to. So the most devastating outbreak, of course, was the Spanish flu in 1918, with worldwide more than 50 million deaths. And all countries in the world were affected, and all levels of society were infected. And of course, the end of 1918 was also the end of the World War I, and so these three major players, political players, in the armistice and in the peace treaty of after World War I, and all of them got affected by flu in one way or the other, and I leave it to your imagination what might have happened if they would have not got sick. Okay, so the H5N1 virus was a virus which is still of great concern, but until 2 years ago it was considered to be the agent of the next pandemic. That it did not work out, but it was so much feared because this virus emerged originally in 1997, and then in 2003 it caused large outbreaks in Southeast Asia in animals, in birds, I should have to emphasize, and then it spread within a few years over large parts of the world, to Africa and most parts of Europe and also Southeast Asia. There are hundreds of millions of killed birds, and occasionally, as I mentioned already, there have been human transmissions. However, so far it has only been a few hundred, but of these few hundred, about 60% died. So this virus is transmitted from this animal reservoir to a large variety of mammals, and so far it has not been adapted to any of these species. However, I should be cautious, and there is very recent evidence that artificially this virus has been adapted to ferrets, and it is being transmitted from ferret to ferret. So these are very recent unpublished data from the lab of Ron Fouchier in Rotterdam. In humans, the H5N1 virus causes severe disease, systemic disease. So this, in a way, it resembles the foul plague pattern in the chicken. So when H5N1 came up, of course, most countries came up with pandemic preparedness plans. So it was anticipated that this virus may cause the next pandemic, and so the countries where the public health services had these plans, and these plans of course, they involved influenza surveillance in men and in animals. A major part was development of vaccines against viruses, with virus subtypes with high pandemic potential, and of course H5 was the prime candidate. And there was also programs to improve the vaccine efficacy, mainly by using adjuvants. Drugs against influenza were on the agenda, the development of new antivirals, neuraminidase inhibitors and others, and of course the control, the disease control in animals, culling and vaccination of animals. So this was these pandemic preparedness plans. And H5 was the main candidate. And what came, of course, is, as you know, something completely different. A new H1N1 virus came. And this was absolutely unpredicted, because H1N1 viruses had been around already before, and it was always said that this should not happen, that a new pandemic virus is of the same subtype as a pre-existing one. However, this came, and this virus was mainly derived from pig viruses, and the new virus had assembled its genes from various of these pig viruses. So this is the outbreak in Germany. So there was the peak was in late 2009 and in early 2010. And this is a typical outbreak curve of pandemic and also of the seasonal outbreaks. Altogether, the outbreak was much milder. I mean, the disease was much milder in most cases than was anticipated. This caused a lot of discussion, public discussion, whether all of this was exaggerated. There were a relatively low number of deaths. However, this is only part of the story. There was at least a tenfold higher number of cases which were very severe, which showed the adult respiratory distress syndrome. And I have only the numbers from the hospital where I'm coming from, and in that season we had about a dozen of such cases. You see that most of them are younger or middle-aged people. There is no, very few underlying disease, very few comorbidity. There's also only a few cases with co-infections. And most of them survived. One of them needed a lung transplant a year later. All of them got neuraminidase inhibitor treatment. But most of them survived only because they got ECMO treatment. Now, what is ECMO treatment? ECMO treatment is this. ECMO treatment is extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, and this is very serious treatment. I mean, this can only be done by modern intensive care facilities. It's the kind of treatment which you need if you undergo heart transplant, except for heart transplantation, this just takes a few hours, but these patients, they had to be on this treatment for 2, 3 or even more weeks. So this is a very severe treatment, and it is the intensive care treatment facilities were at their limits during this outbreak. Now let me have a very brief look at the factors which determine host range or host specificity and also pathogenicity. Now the virus codes for 11 proteins, very low number of proteins, but all of these proteins interact with host factors in the virus life cycle, and of course there are many more host factors than viral factors involved in in the replication cycle. So if a virus adapts, or if a virus is transmitted from one species to another species, and if it adapts to this new species, then these viral proteins, they have to adapt to the host factors in the new species. And I will not go into any details. I will just show one example how this can be studied. Of course, it can be studied in animal experiments. So we have a virus which is originally an avian influenza virus, and then this is transmitted to mice, and it's passage to mice. And if you do this in the laboratory, then you can obtain a murine virus, which is derived from this avian virus. And if you compare the genomes of these viruses, then it turns out that in this case that all of the mutations, and this was a very limited number of mutations, only 7 mutations, and they were all confined to the polymerase. And now the polymerase is the viral protein which is responsible for replication and of the genome, and for the transcription of the genome into the viral proteins. And all of these adaptive mutations were in this polymerase proteins. And so this indicates that the polymerase has to interact with host factors, and major research interest is now in the identification of these host factors. Okay, let's go back to the 2009 pandemic, and what are the lessons of the 2009 pandemic? First, we should be less preoccupied. What do I mean with this? As I pointed out already, there were a few candidates which were supposed to be the prime candidates for the new pandemic: H5N1, H2N2, H7N7, and H9N2. They were expected, but none of them emerged. What emerged is H1N1. So we have to be less preoccupied in our pandemic plans, and also, of course, in the research. We need more flexibility. What do I mean by that? Since H5N1 was the prime candidate according to which the pandemic preparedness plans had been designed, one saw that the vaccination of the new virus would require two doses of vaccination, and it would require an adjuvanted vaccine, which means a vaccine which has an enhanced immunogenicity by the addition of adjuvants. It turned out that the new virus, the H1N1 virus, did not require two vaccinations, and it did not require an adjuvanted vaccine. And there was a big discussion in the population in Germany, and also in other countries, that the adjuvants may have severe side effects, and this prohibited many people of being vaccinated at that time. So if one would have not used this adjuvanted vaccine, I think the vaccination acceptance would have been much better. And then the third point which I would like to point out is that large parts of the population were misinformed about the risk of these adjuvants and about many other things. And so because of this misinformation, many people were insecure, and as a result, the vaccination rate in Germany was very, very low. It was about 8% of the total population, which is almost nothing. In other countries, it was different, but so I think education is very important. Now, on the last slide, I would like point out what will be the future research and development directions. Of course, elucidation of the mechanisms underlying host specificity, pathogenicity, and transmissibility will be very important. We understand a little bit about this, but as has been shown by the predictions of the last pandemic, we still know by far not enough. Vaccination, of course, is another topic of research and development. The vaccine efficacy has to be enhanced by adjuvants and other procedures. Of course, the manufacturing facilities have to be maintained and enlarged. And then the most challenging the greatest challenge is probably the development of a universal vaccine. So far, for each pandemic virus, we have to develop a new vaccine, but not only for the pandemic viruses, but also for the seasonal viruses, which also change their antigenicity. We have to prepare every year a new vaccine, and so a universal vaccine would really be most desirable. And then finally, surveillance, of course, is very important. Surveillance in the human health area, in the animal health area, and of course in the wildlife health area. And this has to be done on national levels, but also on international levels with WHO and these other agencies which are responsible for animal health. Thank you very much.